to speak to the people. Now, when we came under communism, everybody was sitting out in orderly fashion. They listened to everything we had to say. They were allowed to come forward and make their decisions. And there was no problem at all in any of our work. Not only so, the conditions in the community improved almost overnight. I want to tell you, they put on a hygiene campaign to clean up the city, and it surely needed it. And they did a wonderful job. They brought down the prices of the commodities. They raised the living of the workers. Their salaries, their wages went up. And the result was that the people all began to speak for communism. It was an amazing thing. There weren't any arrests, with the exception of perhaps one or two. And those were outstanding characters whom we all knew to be the type that the communists would logically go after. But by and large, there was nothing upon which you could put your finger. And at first it was startling. And then you began to realize, well, after all, this is what these men promised they would do. They went out and arrested all the prostitutes, for China was a land of a million brothels, according to Pearl Buck. And they tore down all the red lamps, and they put these poor women not into prisons to make worse criminals out of them, but into rehabilitation centers where they learned the truth about themselves and their past and how they had been bought by evil capitalists and placed into these houses of ill fame to make money out of them. Now the communists had come to set them free. Well, wouldn't you be happy if you were one of these women? And it wasn't only a matter of a couple of weeks before they were coming out onto the streets of the city and going through the countryside and telling what communism had done for them. They arrested all the opium addicts. And whereas we as missionaries were glad when one opium addict found Christ as his Savior and his life was transformed by the mighty transforming power of God, why, we would write a whole article on it. And the Christian magazines of the Western world would take it up and tell the story across the West of one opium addict cured. Why, the communists had hundreds and thousands of cures. Well, of course they used more drastic methods, but they just got these men, and when this urge came upon them for their opium, they tied them down to the beds and into the chairs where they sat until the yin had gone past. And of course they were broken of their opium addicts, of their opium lusts. And they came out to tell, once they were through it, what communism had done for them, and what a wonderful thing communism was. Wouldn't you do the same? Gambling was virtually wiped out. What could I do as a preacher but commend such a thing? I stood in my pulpit then, every Sunday, and went over the week's newspaper news of the things that had taken place. When the agrarian reform came, and I watched the farmers file down the main street and stand before the chief of police and receive their title deeds to their property, men who had never owned a thing in all their lives, suddenly given a piece of land, and the property that was on it, the buildings and the farming implements, suddenly became theirs. Wasn't this something to praise? The cooperation of the communists in our work. Why shouldn't I praise it? The communist said, "Mr. Milne, what about your orphanage? Why do you have it shut?" I said, "There wasn't enough money to keep it open." "We'll get the money for you." The money was soon found. Our orphanage was reopened. The doors were filled. The rooms were filled once again with poor boys who had no parents. And we wept at the things that we now were able to do. After all, our fears had not been justified. Communism was indeed fulfilling all its promises. And as they cooperated with us, the communists received our just praise. And I still praise them today for the way in which they kept their promises. And as they did so, we also encouraged the people to cooperate with them. When they came around and said, "We know that there are lots of people in the community who were agents for the nationalists, but we know they did it to make a living. There was nothing else for them to do. They had to cooperate with the nationalist regime. Tell them to come and give themselves up to us, and we'll promise you that every one of them shall come back to their families unmolested." And they did. As they gave themselves up, others were encouraged to do the same, and virtually right through the countryside, all the nationalist agents gave themselves up. They were examined, questioned, and cross-questioned, then came back to their homes. Likewise, when they came and said, we know that there are lots of people have hidden arms and ammunition under their homes, under their farms. Why, tell them to bring them all out. No harm will come to them. And very soon they had them piled up on the streets of the city. I'll never forget the day when I stood with the chief of police in our city, and with the commissar, my friend, and with the mayor of the city, the former carpenter, and they invited me to go and witness what took place. And I went down and stood amongst them and saw the piles of ammunition and arms piled so high on the main street of the city, and congratulated the winning team of soldiers who had built the highest pagoda of rifles. And that night they were fêted with a long feast that went on all through the night and a lot of drinking. And as I saw them pick up these arms and throw them into trucks and drive them down the main street and out through the West Gate, they said they were taking them out to the sea and they were going to dump them in the sea. They'd driven the nationalists in the sea. Now they would throw away all the munitions of war. They'd come to establish peace. This was the end of war. I want to tell you that unashamedly I wept. Was it possible that a non-Christian, anti-God organization like communism understood the only way to deal with war? Here it was. At last, it took these men to bring in even a political reign of peace. And I want to tell you that I went along with them, and in my broadcasts I praised them, and I meant every word I said, and I still do. I want to tell you, contrary to all you expected me to say, perhaps, that the communist keeps his promises. Did you take that in? The trouble is, he doesn't tell you for how long he's going to keep them. And for 3 wonderful months, we watched the communist attempt to build a utopia. They were amazing months. 3 months is a long time when you're going through it. And during those 3 months, they gave us all the cooperation that we could ask for, to such an extent that we ourselves began to feel that the communists, after all, were not going to be a government under which we couldn't work. And then it was when they had all the information that they wanted, when they had caused the community to loosen up to the extent of revealing a great deal of their past. They called upon us to write out our past history during that first 3 months. I had to write my history out over 30 times before I got out of China. The first time was during those first months. When there seemed no reason, they asked questions, why shouldn't we answer them? They asked questions about members in the church, why shouldn't we answer them? They came along and asked people in their homes about their neighbors, why shouldn't they answer? These men were cooperating. They went around without revolvers. They didn't molest anybody. Why shouldn't they have our cooperation? And in the schools, they went to the young people and they said, now we want you to write essays on yourself and your past life. Be perfectly frank. Tell us all the bad things as well as the good things. Come clean, went up the cry across the land. Come clean. And they did. And they said, now we want you also to tell us about your brothers and sisters, your fathers and mothers, your relatives, your neighbors. And they wrote essay after essay. Little else was done in the schools. All sorts of other studies were excused, excepting sports and so on, those kind of things. And going out into the fields and looking after the fields and so on. Otherwise, the young people had a heyday in the schools. At the end of 3 months, the curtain fell. And it was then that we learned the real difference between Marxist philosophy and Bolshevik terrorism. And in your minds, I want to draw a clear line of distinction. Marxist philosophy, with all its promise of a utopia in this life, and Bolshevik terrorism, which is that other side of communism that we in the West find ourselves so unable to believe almost and to accept. The word Bolshevism was stamped out of the communist vocabulary and from all official documents. I think it was after the year 1945 or 46. Since then, you won't find them using it. You'll never hear the word used now, and as a result, of course, the brainwashing is so good on this side of the world that you'll find none of our newspapers or magazines ever use the word again. The communists have said, don't use it, because it has a stigma attached to it, So of course we want to be kind to the communists, so why should we use the word? Let me tell you what Bolshevism really is. Because lots of people have said, surely it's a different brand of communism that is being offered to the United States. It's an American brand, adjusting itself to the American communities. That's just exactly what we said in China. We said, anyway, if communism comes here, it won't be the Russian kind of communism. It won't be attended with all the atrocities that it was, because that was a revolution of a different kind. This is introducing communism for China. It will adjust itself to China. And, oh, it's just agrarian reform that they're after. Likewise, they said in Europe, it would just be European communism. In England, they say it will be just English communism, not Bolshevism. But I want to tell you there's no difference. And once the curtain fell, then we understood. But it was too late then. The day was past when anything could be done about it. It was then that the fellow travelers learned the truth. They were the first to be arrested. The mayor of our city, who had been our former carpenter, was arrested that very day. He found himself not being taken to his office, but taken off to an indoctrination course. It was now that they talked about indoctrination centers. This was when they spoke of the people's courts. Now they spoke of the purge. They spoke of reactionaries. These words hadn't been in the communist vocabulary for the first 3 months. For you must remember that the communists came in with an army. The army took over, elevated the fellow travelers into places of responsibility, all people who were known to the community and whom therefore nobody feared. Then when the soldiers left and moved on, it was then when the change took place. And in place of these men in our leadership in our city, we now found the communists left behind what were called the cadres, the men who had been trained as political leaders. Of these there was a great army. It is estimated that there were 350,000 trained communist shock troops that faced the Chinese Nationalist Army. The Chinese Nationalist Army was German trained by and large, and had a total at that time of about 1.5 million south of the Yangtze River. It only took 350,000 to drive them out. But behind that army of uniformed men of the communist army, it is estimated that some 4 million trained cadres, trained in the arts of psychological warfare and re-establishment of a community as a communist community, agents who were first trained to disarm the communities and then afterwards to suppress them. These were the men who did the real job in China. Let us never forget this. The Lenin schools are established for the purpose of training the great army of psychologically prepared cadres so that they may establish the community. This is what Russia is doing today. This is why Dr. Judd could say that they have men ready to go into Vietnam. They have men ready to go into India. They're in there now. Every Indian missionary will tell you that every time they come out of the country, they don't know if they're going back. They're getting ready to take over India. And their missionaries are in there. Hundreds of them. Thousands of them. All over the Orient. Down in Africa. A man who is a leader of one of the biggest missionary societies of Africa has just been down there and has just come back. And he wrote a letter to me and said, Leslie, whatever you do, somewhere, find the means for us to establish a center in Johannesburg. If we don't know to do it now, it'll be too late. And he was asking us for $20,000 to set up a center for literature and for training men who could go back into civilian life, could go back amongst the civil groups and in every strata of the South African society to fight communism with the gospel, of course. Yes, when communism has taken over and when all unsuspectingly the community has been lulled to sleep into letting communism come in, just as America. Now, don't think I'm picking on America. When I say America to you, I mean Great Britain as well, and Canada. And all our Western world at the present time, by infiltration, is being lulled to sleep. Look at the fact of how few of us there are here at these meetings. Isn't that an evidence of the apathy that there is toward this thing? This place should be packed and be not near enough near big enough, if there was a real understanding of the tremendous thing with which we're faced, and the truth about communism was even remotely understood. But people don't understand. They can't see how it's possible for there to be two such complete sides to communism. But you see, the communist front is what you want. The communist Bolshevik back is what they want. They'll give you what you want to begin with. Everything you can ask for. They'll make promises. They'll promise you the sky. And then when they've taken over, and when they have the authority, it's then when they put on the clamps. Now they started through the community. Then it was that accusations were the order of the day. Accusations backwards and forwards. Young people called upon to accuse their parents. The people's courts were set up outside our front door. They had their execution platform with its back to our boys' school wall. And there they would perpetrate the executions. The first people to be executed in our community were the lawyers. This may comfort any of you who happen to be associated with law. Not only lawyers, but law students, or anybody who had anything to do with the legal world. The reason for that, of course, was because lawyers to the communists represent a trained mind. They excused themselves by saying that these lawyers were parasites on the community. They were what they called bloodsuckers. They sucked the blood of the poor. They worked only for the rich and never for the poor. And I'm sorry to have to tell you that that by and large was the condition in China. By and large, lawyers in that country did work only for the rich. And so there seemed to be some measure of credence for the thing that the communists did in the first case. But very soon it was evident that it wasn't only the lawyers, but one category after another were taken up. And very soon those who had any kind of leadership, those who in the community demanded any kind of loyalties, were soon being dealt with and brought before the people's courts. And many of the children found themselves in the awful position of having to read the essays that they had written in their classrooms as accusations against their own relatives. Can I ever forget the sight of a little girl whom I first knew when she was only 3 years of age? I used to dandle her on my knee. We had no children at that time, and the Chinese children were always welcome in our home. It was one way that we got near to the Chinese people. And my office door was never closed. I still have a little Bible, which this little girl tore when I was on my knees in prayer, and she would come in and come and kneel beside me. And she had torn my little Bible in Ephesians chapter 2. And I did my best to explain to her what it meant. Never tired of trying to tell this little child the wonderful, wonderful love of the Lord Jesus for her. But she never responded to that message. And when she was about 11, my wife and I noticed a tremendous change in her. We couldn't understand it. She was in our school. We never dreamed that right in our own Christian school there were teachers who were working for the communists. Yet this child came home with what I now understand to be direct communist thoughts. Insubordination. Opposition to the parents, refusal to do what father and mother said, and the consequence was that it became the talk of a group, and we did what we could for the parents in it, seemed not to get very far with them, and a number of students in our school the same way. We called them discipline problems. I used to have these children up and do my best to love them to Christ, and also speak to them quite straightly about their condition, and how they were disappointing their parents and so on, but I just couldn't get to first base with them. Never did I dream that the vice principal of our Christian school with his wife were actually organizing communist cell groups in their home on our campus. And after school hours, when I thought that this vice principal was looking after the backward students and giving them extra training as a special tutoring to help them over their problems, never did I dream that they were being taught Marxism. I wonder how many of you realize how much your young people are being taught today. You be careful where your children go. Find out the groups they're going to. Never, never take for granted that a young person is absolutely safe. None of them are safe in these days. Every single new organization that comes into existence must at once be suspected until it can be absolutely proven that it's safe for your child or any other child to go. And this little girl had been well indoctrinated. But by the time the communists came in, she was then around 13 and a half, as I remember. And when they came in, she was also listed in the newspaper as one of the communist students who had collaborated. And she was given the option as to what she would like to do in those first 3 months. Of course, we didn't know then it was going to be 3 months. And she chose preliminary instruction to become a nurse. And she had a wonderful time. But at the end of 3 months, it was all over. She also had written essays while she was in her training about her parents. And now her mother was up on trial. And her mother was taken to the platform, and I was called out. I had to attend every people's court killing from then on until I left the country, with the exception of the period that I was in indoctrination course that I'll be telling you about, is it tomorrow or the next day. And this little girl was called up on the platform, and she stood in front of the microphone. And as she stood there before the microphone, she was called upon to read the accusation against her mother, the essay that she had read. Well, I'm all right to 3 o'clock, brother, am I? Is that right? Oh, I beg your pardon. I thought you said 3 o'clock. She's on. Then I'll have to stop. And this little girl stood before the microphones and read the accusation against her mother. And she couldn't get through it, and she broke down. And the communists, as she turned and said to them, we heard her over the microphone, why should I have to do this? Am I not going to become a communist? This is my mother. Why should I have to accuse her? And the communist said, you don't understand. We'll teach you. And they took her away. And about 3 months later, that same girl stood before the microphone. And this time, the communists had done what they wanted to do. They had that little child. And she stood up there before the microphone. There was no life in her voice. There wasn't sign of life in her eyes. She just seemed not to be there. And she read in monotone voice the accusation against her mother. When she finished, she called for a show of hands. And as the hands went up, she turned around and took up the knife that was on the table beside her on the platform. And her mother, tied to a post in an emaciated condition, behind her. She tore aside her mother's dress and plunged that knife into her mother's breast. And one after another, the members of the family had to take up that knife and plunge it into that body. I'm speaking to you of 20th century communism. And I'm not speaking to you out of a book. I'm telling you what we saw with our own eyes. Communism has not changed. And if communism comes to the United States of America, it has exactly the same things to offer. Is there any answer to it? Is there any way to stop it? That will be one of the problems that we will face in this school for anti-communists. May God help us that we may find the answer before we leave this place.
You see, this is the story that Barbara Walters and John Chancellor and David Brinkley never tell you. I've heard the same story, however, from missionaries who were in China at the same time. Stories just as brutal, stories just as horrifying, stories of inhuman treatment of human beings. And yet we never talk about that in America today. America is in trouble because you are not getting the truth out of your media. And I think most Americans understand that. We have further tapes that will help to clarify many of the issues and many of the problems that our nation is facing. We need your help if America is to survive as an independent nation, and if we are to pass on the heritage of freedom that we inherited to our children and our children's children. If you're interested in getting involved, getting further tapes, or entering into our educational program so that you can educate others, please call me at area code 408-423-7040, or write to me at 618 Frederick in Santa Cruz, California. Freedom is lost when good people do nothing. Now is the time to become involved. Thank you. God bless you.